Voices of VR podcast.
Hello, my name is Ken Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my series from Venice Immersive 2025, today's episode is with the grand prize winner of Venice Immersive 2025, which is The Clouds Are 2,000 Meters Up, which is by Singing Chen, who also won in 2022 with her piece of The Man Who Couldn't Leave. So this is a part of the competition, and I'm winning the competition, but it's also this blend of both virtual reality and more installation components. And so it's a pretty vast, wide open space. It's a long, like 50 to 70 minute piece that you end up walking through a vast amount of space. So the story is kind of an adaptation of a novel based in Taiwan. And so the story is that basically a husband loses his wife, discovers her novel, and then basically goes on this whole adventure trying to discover some of the mysteries and secrets she was writing about. And it's difficult to know whether or not they were the real or not real, but they end up turning out to be completely real. And he ends up discovering all these different things and continuing her work in some sense. And so the context that are being explored is that it's an exploration of these indigenous myths as this protagonist goes on an epic journey with these imaginal real or not real realms. So it's a husband whose wife has died, and he's picking up clues from her work as a writer as he explores her office, gets lost within a maze, and then embarks on this adventure deep in nature and in the forest, having these encounters with these mythical beings. So the primary center of gravity is the earth element, so the sense of embodied and environmental presence. And so probably one of the most distinct aspects of this piece is that it's using like a blend of all sorts of different volumetric capture techniques, both in terms of the volumetric capture of the actors, but also like these Gaussian splats, as well as just like mashing up with the traditional 3D modeling of these worlds. Has a very high resolution, spatial resolution, as you're in these Gaussian splats. And so it has quite a transportive feel as you go into these different scenes. And it's staged like a theatrical staging, especially during the second half where you're seeing all these different interactions that are happening in the context of this space. And, you know, the actual video that was recorded for this goes into a lot of the different details of the production that they had to do in order to do this kind of virtual production and how to work with all these actors and everything. So there ends up being a lot of like theme park design type of feel where it's these spatial architectural spaces that feel like you're exploring this kind of maze portion. And they're recreating this spatial journey where you feel like you're on this kind of wandering with some degree of agency. But it was all very contained and constrained in terms of like you're not wandering any place. It's very much still on a linear path. But it does give you a sense of small amounts of this embodied agency as you're moving through these spaces. And you kind of are editing the piece in the terms of how fast you're moving and what you're able to look at as you're going through the piece. So you're mostly an invisible ghost without any embodiment, although there are some scenes where you have some agency to move around, and there's other scenes where you're more of an invisible audience, or maybe you're interacting or looking at different objects within the context of the office. But for the most part, you're kind of like a ghost-like character that's exploring all these different things. But overall, just some incredible technical breakthroughs to kind of pull all those different elements together. Let's see, the second elemental center of gravity of this piece is the water element. That's much more of the cinematic and storytelling and very narrative driven and trying to evoke different emotions. And so it's grounded overall in this kind of cinematic tradition, but it's really blending a lot more of these theatrical elements, I'd say, as well as the literary components of this piece that's fusing it all together. But there are some like dimensions of more cinematic cutscenes that you get a sense of the rhythm and the pacing that are very much informed by film. So the last half involves much more of a theatrically staged dialogue. So that's where it moves away from being more of the cinematic, and the overall spatial context stays pretty static. So the experience of time is more like being in a theatrical play. So if you're going in there expecting to have a lot of quick edits and to have this sense of moving and pacing, then you don't have that conceit because the time is just unfolding in real time, especially in the second half. So it feels like you're kind of embedded into the scene and you're basically put into the scene because you're in the spatial context and the scene is just playing out, which is a little bit different than watching a film, because if there was a film, there'd be cuts, there'd be close-ups, and it would basically, you have a expectation of a shortening of the time. But in this sense, there's no real shortening of the time. You're just living out the time as it unfolds in real time, which is kind of a unique experience overall. The other thing is that all different actors are being captured volumetrically, and so you get a lot more fidelity of the facial and emotional expression that you don't normally get in most of these different virtual productions. Most of these virtual productions are either doing cinematic 360 or other types of CGI characters that don't have any emotional expressivity at all. But because this is using these highly technical volumetric captured faces, you get a lot more emotional expressivity than you normally would within most pieces, which I think helps to ground this overall piece into the emotions that are being communicated. So it goes way beyond what you could see with these other techniques, but it's also fusing together with that on top of the traditional CGI and modeling, as well as Gaussian splats as well. So the third center of gravity is the air element, a lot more of the mental presence. In terms of, you know, there's a lot of dialogue that's in this experience, a lot of people talking to each other. So you end up having to digest all this dialogue. And so it ended up being a little bit of a mental experience, but it's also based upon a book. And so it's coming from this literary tradition that has these rich conversations that are happening. And so it feels like a little bit of a translation of a little bit less than a movie and more of like a theatrical play, especially in the second half as you're going through. Overall, it's a bit of a mystery as well. And so there's a bit of, you know, driving of like what happened and like these questions of trying to gain more information. So it's this mystery that you're learning more information as you're going along, as he's digging into these indigenous myths. And he comes to find out that these are completely true myths. And maybe they've always been true. They're not really myths. They're just a part of reality. And so there's this elements of magical realism that you're slipping into. And also elements of poetic dream logic, especially in the spatial storytelling aspect and the maze portion that has some incredible like spatial design and ways that you're kind of walking up to these post-it notes, and these post-it notes are kind of giving you different bits of information, but you have your own agency to kind of explore around and to get these little bits of information. And then finally, the fire element is that there's no real like narrative agency per se. There are these interactive components where you have freedom to be able to move your body through what path you're going to take to go through this maze, although it's not a maze per se, because it's mostly a linear path, but you do have some variance to see what way you're going to hit these different waypoints. So it's very clear what the waypoints are, and you have your choice to figure out the pacing in which you're going to those waypoints. So there is a bit of a sense that you are engaging and interacting in a way, but it's the least highlighted elemental presence. And so some of the different themes and archetypal character that's being explored, it's everything from grief from a death of loss, going onto a spiritual adventure to find connection. And from the description about the book, the author that inspired the piece, they say he weaves dreams, memory, and multiple dimensions of time and space has long inspired me, the director, Singing Chen. So turning inward to explore the spatial context that symbolically represent an inner journey of discovery. And so they say, quote, grief-stricken and seeking connection, he sets out on a surreal journey into a dreamlike scenes, a maze of the subconscious, mist-shrouded forests, ancient tree hollows, and symbolic inner landscapes. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Singing happened on Monday, September 1st, 2025, at Venice Immersive in Venice, Italy. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
大家好,我是Singing Chen,我是一个影像创作者,然后我先前的作品是无法离开的人,那云在两千米是我第三部VR。
Hi everyone, my name is Singing Chen, I am a filmmaker. My previous VR work is The Man Who Couldn't Leave back in 2022, and the latest work for now is The Clouds Are 2,000 Meters Up.
And maybe you can give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into the space.
就是关于你的创作的背景，然后跟如何进入VR的创作。我过去大概二十年都在拍纪录片跟剧情片，然后在2018年的时候，高雄电影节他们开始有了VR的单元。那因为一开始大家对VR还很不熟悉，所以他们就找了一些电影导演每年有几个计划找电影导演来尝试做VR这样。所以我在2018年的时候拍了我的第一个VR叫《留给未来的残影》。那当时它是一个舞蹈电影，我跟编舞家周淑玉合作。那合作之后，我发现VR360它有非常好的一个很结合剧场跟结合电影的一个媒介这样。所以后来就后来就在国家人权馆看到我的作品之后，就希望我可以用这样子的媒体做一个关于白色恐怖的题材。然后我也发现了，其实VR还有非常多的可能性可以探索。那个也是我很喜欢的一个部分。
So my background in the past 20 years, I've mostly worked on documentary and feature films, so mostly in traditional cinema. But back in 2018, the Kaohsiung Film Archive, who started the VR program, they reached out to me and a few other filmmakers to ask if we would like to try doing the VR creation, and that is what we did. I did my first VR experience, which is a VR 360 film called After Image for Tomorrow. And it's kind of like a dance film, dance piece, and we collaborated with the choreographer Zhou Shuyi. And also through that experience, we found the VR 360, this medium, is kind of like a combination of film and theater. And after that, the National Human Rights Museum in Taiwan, they reached out to me and they say they would love to do a VR experience, which is about the White Terror, the history of Taiwan. And that is why we started the piece of The Man Who Couldn't Leave. And that is also through the process that I found out that VR still got lots of potential and lots of different possibilities.
And maybe you could give a bit more context for how the Clouds Are 2,000 Meters Up began. I understand that it started as an adaptation from a novel. Maybe you could give a bit more context to the book and your journey into starting to adapt it into VR.
那可以谈一下就是《云在2000米》的这个创作是怎么开始的，因为我们知道它一开始是由小说改编，那可以谈一下说那它是怎么从小说然后变成到现在的创作的过程。
在我完成了无法离开的人之后，然后也是公共电视，就是我长期有合作的一个单位，台湾的公共电视，他们看到无法离开的人，然后就想要合作我的下一部片这样。那吴明义是台湾一个很重要的作家，那他的小说非常的特别，因为他小说里面有生态，然后有历史，然后也融合了在形式上面融合了回忆，然后梦境、现实或过去的时间、未来的时间跟现在的时间，所以他的小说本身就有非常丰富的 layer 在存在在那边，可以让创作者有非常大的一个改编的想象。先讲到这边。
So after I finished my previous work, The Man Who Couldn't Leave, the Taiwan Public Television Foundation, which is also one of the very important partner in my past creation, reached out to me and we discussed the idea of working on the new VR experience together. And that is the beginning why we started to do the Clouds Are 2,000 Meters Up. And yeah, as you know, the story was originally adapted from a novel, which is written by the author Wu Mingyi. And Wu Mingyi is very special and very unique writer in Taiwan. And his work is quite special because he covers a lot of different themes, nature, history, and different culture. And content-wise, it kind of like often his work is a combination of memory and dreams and also got the multiple timelines, and all these elements combines into different layers of the stories, and that is the specialty of the work, and that is also influenced the VR piece that we're creating.
So maybe you could give me a sense of where you began with this piece, if you had the script written out, or there's also the spatial design and there's also the techniques of Gaussian splats that you were trying to find the aesthetics of, and so just trying to get a sense of where you began and trying to piece everything together.
那可以分享一下在云在这个作品，因为它其实有很多不同的 部分要做，那不管是说像空间设计，还是像高斯波件的扫描，还是剧本，那可以分享一下是从哪个部分开始，怎么把这个拼图给拼在一起的。
在一开始的时候，因为小说非常非常的复杂，我现在呈现的大概只有小说的大概三分之一的部分，所以在一开始的时候，我们当然已经有了这个原著的小说，然后大概在前，因为我们制作了这个片子大概制作了2年的时间，所以前半年的时间我们全部都在做各种的技术测试，就是各种不包含 Gaussian splatting， 然后 4D views， 然后DevKit 的另外一个扫描技术或 photogrammetry， 就是各种的技术我们都亲自做了测试，然后看它的成果，然后来讨论说这个技术的美学跟感性在哪里。先到这边。
So at the very beginning of the production, because the whole production process took about 2 years, and the first 6 months, we did mostly all the different technique testing, because the story itself is very complicated. And what we see right now in the VR experience is only probably 1/3 of the original story. So we need to decide how to simplify the story. So we started with the technical testing. We're testing all the different things, the Gaussian splatting, the 4D views, and different technique in volumetric capture, just to get to know what is the texture that all these images, all these techniques is going to present, and aesthetically, what is the best fit for the story. So that is the first step that we did.
然后我大概在半年过后我才开始真正开始写剧本，然后根据我们过去做的所有的技术的东西来写剧本。所以在写剧本的时候已经有大概60%左右是确定说，哦，这样子的这个部分可能可以用什么技术，这个部分可能也可以用什么技术。可是当然这只是一个计划，因为Ken Bai 可能知道就是 Gaussian Splatting 它非常的新，所以我们当时也没有编辑它的工具，也不知道怎么样把它放在 VR 里面，所以其实是先写了一个大概的剧本，然后才开始去技术的工具上面慢慢去做开发这样。
Okay, so after the first 6 months, that is the point that I actually started to work on the script. And so at that moment, we have all these notes and all these results that we tested on different techniques. So based on that, when I work on the script, I basically got that 60% of the plan is already confirmed, that I know which part of the story and I want to use what kind of technique to present that. So make the whole plan is more clear. But of course, that was only the plan at that moment, because at the moment, for example, for Gaussian splatting, as you know, that was relatively new technique. So at the moment, we still didn't know how to improvise that into VR, how to edit that and how to make it work. But we just did have a vision and have the imaginary light into the script at that moment.
Yeah, and so it sounds like in watching your artist statement video that there was this very early of Gaussian splats in 2023. So it sounds like you needed to develop your own technical pipeline to figure out how to even use it. But that from the preliminary testing, it sounded like that was going to open up all sorts of new possibilities for how you told the story. So maybe you could just talk a bit about some of the other lessons learned once you did that 6 months of initial research.
那边还有看那个 creator video， 那也看到说，因为就是也知道说，因为 Gaussian splatting 非常的新，所以有点像是我们要创，直接要研发出，或者是说研究出一个我们自己的就是工作的 pipeline 的流程。然后也知道说，那像刚刚做了那个6个月的很多的测试，可不可以聊一下说，那这些测试当中得到了学到了什么东西，然后得到了什么觉得很宝贵的资讯。
就是分成几个部分，一个部分是说场景，一个部分是人物。那场景的部分在比较早的时候我们就决定，比如说哦，西门町我们不可能用建出来的，然后我们可能是用可以用各种扫描的。然后比如说云端空间，它本身就是一个虚拟的空间，所以我们可能可以用 3D 建模的方式来呈现它。然后森林的部分，可能森林的部分那个时候是最晚决定的一部分，因为不知道怎么处理森林。那妻子的房间也很快我们就知道我们会搭一个景，然后来真正扫描它，因为毕竟我过去是做电影的，我觉得我还是希望可以说一个故事，让大家在那个电影的感觉里面，而不是技术去凌驾了这个说故事。所以在这些决定的基础是在于说如何可以在写实跟梦境或虚拟之间找到一个很好的平衡，让大家可以借由技术就知道，哦，我可能有一个什么样的感受，这样先到这边。
Yeah,
So the two major things that we learned, two parts. The first of the part is the scenes we see in the VR experience. Because for the different scenes that we learn different technique, how to use that. For example, for the first scene on the street, the Ximending scene, at the very beginning, we knew that it is impossible for us to build all the scene. So we decided to use the combination of different scanning materials to build a scene. And for example, for the clouded chasm, which is already like a virtual space, so we are able to use 3D modeling to recreate the space. And for the forest, that was the last scene that we could decide how to do, because like at the beginning we didn't know how we can make it happen. And also like for the study room that we see in the experience, we decided very early that we would like to actually build the set and do the filming, do the scanning inside the set, because like I'm from filmmaking background and I still value the storytelling at the core of all the creations. I don't want the technique to be over top of the story itself. So we still want to create a sense of the realistic vibe. So all the trying, all the discussion we had was to find a balance between realistic, the virtual world, and also the dream, to find a balance of it. And all the technique is to how to let people feel about this sense of the balance and the sense of the emotion.
那人物部分目前也是用两种技术，一个是 4D views， 一个是 Gaussian spatting。那人物的部分，我们是跟森林一样，是最晚决定要用什么样的技术的，因为我们讨论了很多，是比如说在无法离开的人跟留给未来的残影里面，里面的拍摄的人物主角会面对观众，然后用眼神去跟观众做一个互动，把观众借由眼神的接触，抓进那个 VR 里面。可是，在 Sixth of 里面没有这个东西，那我如何让大家可以跟这个主角产生一个连结？所以当时讨论很多是用什么技术才会让这个人看起来是有灵魂的？那我觉得这个在我们的 brainstorming 的讨论非常的有趣，这样。
So the second part is the character. So for the character, we use mainly two techniques: the 4D views and Gaussian splatting. So similar to the forest scene, we made this decision very late because we had a lot of brainstorming, a lot of discussion on this. And in my previous two works, The Man Who Couldn't Leave and After Image for Tomorrow, it was live acting shooting. So we were able to create eye contact between the character and the viewer. So this eye contact, which is very important, that really grabs people into the world of VR. But this time we do everything in Sixth of in this virtual environment. So we had a lot of discussion, how could we make this happen? How could we build the connections between the character and the viewer? And all the brainstorming we had throughout the process like leads to the two techniques that we chose to use. The process was incredibly precious for us.
And I'm wondering if you comment on the different virtual production techniques that you needed to use with having the actors look into virtual reality to understand the full context of the scene. And yeah, as I was watching the artist creator video, it seemed like you needed to expand all the different directing techniques for working within the game engine, working with people wearing the VR headsets, and with all these different techniques would draw out new skills for you as a director in order to pull everything together. So just wondering if you could comment on that.
那对于就是像这样子有很用很多 virtual production 的技法，那在这导演本身的导演技巧，或是跟在导演的那个能力上面有什么样？你对这件事情有什么样的看法？你有得到什么样开发什么新的技能，或者是说有什么累积了什么新的经验？因为在那个创作影片当中也看到说，其实这个跟传统的导演的工作上非常不一样。那可能要如何知道说跟这些不管是技术部门，或者说演员的指导方式也不一样，那你在这当中你是如何去应变？
这个也分两个部分，一个是指导演员的部分，然后一个是比较是在游戏引擎，就是 programmer 的那个部分。那在指导演员的部分，因为这三位演员都是非常的在电影产业里面非常已经资深的演员了，所以他们很知道表演的界限在哪里。但是对他们最大的挑战是我们全部都在绿棚或黑棚里面拍，所以他们没有任何物件可以知道现在是什么样的状况，因为演员是很需要环境来帮他建立这个角色的，但是他们没有。所以为了克服这一点，我们在很早期的时候就已经做了VR 的一些场景的设定，然后让他们在演戏之前可能可以大概已经看到场景了，或者是像妻子的扫描的空间，我们也是先已经搭景并扫描下来了，所以他在妻子房间里面演戏的时候，他真的可以看到妻子的房间，然后帮助他进入角色这样。
For the directing work for me, I think that also divided into two parts. One is with the actor, how I work with the actors, and the other part is how I collaborate with the programmers from the technical team. So for the actors part, because the three main actors that we see in the experience, they are all very experienced and they are very good at what they are doing. So they have this rich experience on acting. So.For acting itself, I was not worried about that, and it was a great collaboration. But throughout the process, because they have to do the acting in mostly in the green screen, the green studio or the black screen, so they couldn't see any of the environments, which is very different from the traditional filmmaking. But this environment is crucial, it's very important for actors to actually like get into their character. So what we did to help and to work with them is at the very early stage, we tried to build the VR scenesset up inside the headset. So for example, for the wife's study room, that we had this room set up already inside VR. So when the actress was acting, she was actually able to see the whole environment inside VR. So she knows like what kind of environment that she is in and what is the vibe. So that really helps with their acting.
第二部分就是进入游戏引擎，进入那个 Unreal Engine 的那个部分。那我们确实在前面做了非常严谨的计划，可是后面实现的这个计划大概只有六成而已，就是另外的四成是在 Engineer 里面做不同的尝试的改变。所以现在看到的其实是把他们放进场景以后，然后整个比如说电影的 storytelling 要怎么进行，整个片子的 tempo 要怎么进行，然后是否这些本来 4D view放置的位置也要改变，或者是前后顺序都要改变，等于说在后面的游戏引擎里面又做了40%的创造是在后面的。
So at the beginning, we have the very thorough and very detailed planning that we made with the programmers, the engineers who work on the Unreal Engine with us. But when we actually started the process,I think only 60% of the plan actually did as we planned. So the rest of the 40% is that we improvise like through the process. That is kind of like a very flexible, that's a very organic process during how we work with the programmers and all the programmers like create something altogether through the process. So we did a lot of trying and lots of changes.Throughout the process, especially for example, for the storytelling, how this will work in the engine environment. And for the story tempo, what would actually make sense when people put on the headsets, when people really be in there. And also like all the digital elements, the 4D view materials that we scan, that we shot, what is the position of them, and what come first and what go last. All these very detailed things that we improvise, we change, we try every possibility throughout the process. So it's a very like huge portion, like 40%. It was not as planned, but we did in the process altogether. Mm.
And I'm wondering if you could say a few words around the story in terms of there's a husband who has a wife who's passed away. He finds all of her data in the cloud that then she was investigating something that it's unclear whether or not this was something actually happened or something that was more mythological. But somehow he goes on this journey and searching for this spotted snow leopard. So maybe you could describe the arc of the story that we're going on.
他可以分享一下就是故事层面。那我们可以看到这故事其实是关于夫妻的故事，然后在妻子过世之后，先生发现了一些就是他的云端资料，然后也有点好像不太确定说这个故事是真的发生的，还是说它是一个传说的故事。但是无论如何，他踏上了这个旅程，然后也带着观众踏上了这个旅程。那当然可不可以分享一下这个故事它的整个轴线发生了什么事情？
就是讲故事的部分嘛，哈。就是这个故事是关他是本来是一个律师，然后他非常的忙碌，然后他太太在一次那个火车的意外事件中丧生了。可是他当时完全不知道他太太要去哪里，他太太为什么踏上那个旅程，他太太为什么坐上那班火车，他完全都不知道。然后他太太有个书房，他以前也很少进去打扰他。虽然说他并不是不爱他太太，可是他太太有一部分是他完全不知道的一个部分，所以他开始发现了他太太云端的资料、云端的小说之后，就根据小说的线索，然后还有一些就是新闻的事件，然后慢慢去踏上了这个旅程，然后到山里面去寻找，跟着他太太的足迹去寻找一个消失的文化，就是卢凯族的文化。那个也是他太太有一半血统的一个部分，这样。然后最后他在其实因为这个是文学的改编，所以其实在最后他有一点点遇到了，像是遇到了小说里面的人物叫阿豹，然后他不知道这个是真的还假的，但是这整个旅程其实已经启发他了一个不知的就是启发他的内在的反省的一个部分。然后他决定跟帮助他太太完成这个小说在最后。
Okay, so the storyline itself is actually have a lot of elements. So basically we follow the main character Guan, who was originally a lawyer who was incredibly busy, but he lost his wife in the train accident. But at that accident happened, he had no idea why she was in that train, where was she going. He actually has simply like no clue. The wife has a study room at home, but Guan rarely go inside to disturb her, and it's not that they don't love each other, it's just like his wife has a part that he is totally not familiar with. He totally like not knowing anything. So after he found out the unfinished novel written by his wife, he kind of pieced up the different information from the novel and also some elements from the news. So piecing up these puzzles, he decided to went on the journey into the mountain that his wife was originally going. So he went into the mountain and trying to discover what is the thing that his wife was looking for, and also what is the culture that the Rukite, which is the indigenous tribe culture in Taiwan, because in the story, the wife also have the half of the blood, half of the culture is from the Rukite tribe. So it is kind of like tracing the family history and also tracing the novel story at the same time. So it's based on the literature, based on the novel. So when Guan, at the end, at the later half of the story, he encountered the character Abao, which is actually from his wife's novel. He has no idea that it is true, or that it's some sort of imaginary, or it's any kind of like a virtual encounters. But no matter it's true or it's not, the true thing is this encounter and this journey had the reflection, inspire him on the reflection on himself and the relationship that the couples have. And in the very end, he decided to finish the unfinished novel for his wife. And our audience will go on the journey along with Guan. Yes.
And yeah, there's a number of different techniques that you go through the different scenes in the beginning, and you have the discovery of the death and the kind of the explosion, then you're like zooming back, and then you go into more of a photorealistic depiction of a room that you're seeing him walk around. And then I want to get to this part where you're actually walking through this like liminal space where you're going from room to room, and you have like these little post-it notes on the wall with little writing, and then those become waypoints that you walk to and you hear another bit of the story, but it feels like I'm kind of walking through a spatial journey in a very theatrical sense. And it reminded me a lot of Celine Dion's work of Songs of a Passerby, where you're kind of walking through these liminal spaces. And but yeah, I just felt like I was both walking through and knowing where to go based upon the waypoints, but also having these cutscenes of the story that's unfolding. So yeah, just love to hear a little bit more around the spatial design of moving your body through space, through these liminal spaces in order to tell a core part of the story.
那因为在故事当中我们也看到说 不管是技术层面或者是说尤其是在空间设计上，那个这个空间的旅程其实我们看到非常多元的呈现。那其实从一开始有那种比较真的是街道的场景，然后有进到真的比较像现实一样的书房的场景，然后再接着进到就是有点像是有很多的不同的穿过光门，然后走进了很像迷宫，有不同的走道的空间。然后我们还可以看到墙上的便条纸，可以靠近去听，有都可以听到不同的声音。那这样的有点空间的旅程，是一个对我来说是一个非常的剧场感的旅程。然后也让我联想到就是 Celine Dion 像那个 Songs for Passerby， 像这样子的一个就是一直走动的旅程。我好像知道我要去哪里，我好像知道我要去哪里，只是我好像不太确定。但是在这个旅程当中，又有很多故事的出现。那可不可以跟我们谈一下，尤其是在空间设计跟空间跟故事的呼应这个部分？
一开始因为一开始的那个西门町的场景是希望先营造着一个，就是这是一个很寻常的一天，然后一天的时候事故发生了。那事故发生了，然后火车来了，直接就是有一些东西它没有办法，应该说有一些没有办法真的用语言去表达的，或者是有一些东西没有办法只是用一个单一场景或者是对白去表达的，其实可以用可以用 VR 里面的空间跟转景转换的场景来做一个身临其境的感受。就比如说那个火车打过来，然后整个西门町的场景从白天瞬间变成一种黑暗的状态，那这个东西是别的媒体没有办法达到的。那所以我在这里面运用了很多类似这样子的事情。先到这边。
So indeed, the special design plays an important role in this creation. For example, for the first scene, the Ximending, the street scene, we would like to create the sense that is just like let people know that is a perfectly normal day. And you see the scene that's basically like the world that you are right now, but all in a sudden, everything changed. So how to present this all in a sudden, everything changed feeling. I think that is very important that there's a lot of things that we cannot use just like languages or dialogue or even one single scene to tell the story or the environment. So we use a lot of different transition, and especially we play with the special space inside VR that is also very unique, which is not any other medium can actually reach, is that we create the different space in VR and create the kind of like dramatic transitioning as you see like the train coming, and then all the scene just like suddenly transform from day to night. So that is something that we use a lot in this creation, to play with the space, play with the transition.
那不管从我过去360度电影的作品留给未来才能或无法离开的人，到这个云在2000米，我可能除了 storytelling 之外，我最看重的一件事情就是观众的身体，也就是我们体验者的身体。那所以比如说刚刚那个例子，或者是说刚刚有讲到走在迷宫里面，你可以慢慢听，然后你也可以走很快，你也可以一个一个慢慢听，或甚至坐下来就是在那边感受那个场景给你的说不出的感受，这个都是在这个体验里面是开放的，那也是我希望留给观众身体的一个部分。那或者是说刚刚讲的那个缩小的 scale 的那个房间也是，就是当我在刚刚那个场景城市顺变以后，我缓慢拉 就是镜头缓慢往外拉，那那个其实是有点电影的手法，然后后来慢慢降落在那个妻子的小小的一个空间，好像关整个人因为这个事件缩小了。所以这些事情我可能真的是结合了电影或剧场，或者是甚至这种纯粹是 VR 的体验才能有的东西，把这三者结合在一起这样。
So no matter in my previous creation, those like VR 360 video or the clouds are 2,000 meters up, which is a sixth of experience now, the core is always the story. But the other thing that I value very much is the sense of body for the viewers. Because just like what you mentioned, that inside the clouds are 2,000 meters up, people are able to walk through like the maze, the corridor, and they can listen to the different notes, and they can actually walk as fast or as slow as they want, and they can even sit down just to feel the vibe. That's something that is hard to describe, no matter for them or for us. So this sense of body for the viewer is something really important, and that is something that we would love to offer to the viewer when they experience the piece. And all these like environment, all these experience, how you want to experience the work is very open. And so that is the sense of body that is very important. And another thing is that, just like you mentioned about the different scenes that I use the different like, kind of like the image language, we use combining different technique from traditional cinema and theater. So you can see that we zoom out from the scene and we kind of see the smaller scale of the wife's study room, and you see Guan, which is shrinking inside the study room. It kind of like creates this motion or this like emotional feelings, but we visualize them and we put it into like a more like a theatrical or a cinematic scene that people can actually be inside and witness and feel everything by themselves. Yeah.
所以其实我常常会看到，因为我们每天都会在那边观，希望了解观众他们看到什么，所以我只要能在那边我都会去在那边看。然后我觉得很有趣，就是其实大部分的观众有很多的行为或者是感受 feedback 都跟观非常像，那可能这个就是我希望可以达到的，就是虽然有一个主角他在进行他的旅程，可是我们观众好像也是跟着他的旅程。所以比如说到处在找东西，或者是我们觉得不知道这到底是什么迷宫，到底是什么状况，观也是第一次走进去，就是这些反应，观众的反应跟观都非常像的时候，其实已经让观众慢慢可以进入了观的一个位置，然后一直到最后这样。
So during the festival, every time if I can, I will always stay on site to take a look of what is people's reaction, what they do and what they see, how they react during the experience. So for me, that is very interesting that we found many audiences, they have the very similar reaction and very similar journey as Guan, the main character inside the story. So for example, like people got curious, people got a little bit lost when they got into the maze, and that is the same feeling that Guan feels. He was also the first time getting into this mysterious space and he was looking for something, and seeing audience that stepping in the journey that is very similar and highly sync with Guan, which is really important and really interesting. And we see like throughout the process when people are following Guan, it's not just Guan step on the journey, it's that the audience also step on the journey with him. And throughout the process we can see the audiences, they get closer and closer to the story and closer to the character, which is very nice for us to see.
And I'm wondering if you could talk about the design process of the maze and if you drew any inspiration from architecture or theater or theme park design, where you always have something to look at the distance or just guiding people through the space. So I'd love to hear a little bit more around the process of designing this maze portion.
大家可以想请导演多谈一下，尤其是迷宫这个场景的设计的历程。那是不是有什么样子的灵感来源？是建筑吗？还是剧场吗？还是甚至是主题公园之类的？那因为我们也在里面，其实我们一直保持了一个距离，在看这个迷宫里面发生的故事，然后他觉得很有趣，然后希望导演分享一下迷宫的设计的过程。
这个迷宫在小说里面它就是很简短的，它有很多很多不同的往下的楼梯，这是小说里面写到的。那每一个楼梯的下面都有妻子的文字，这个是小说原本有的。那小说的线索只有这些，其他都没有。但是其实这个是一个虚拟世界，所以团队在知道这个剧本的时候，大家都对于这个迷宫要怎么设计有非常非常多的想法，然后非常的 exciting， 就是这个部分这样。那所以刚开始我们在设计这个迷宫的时候，就希望说，它是一个往下的楼梯。可是事实上，在我们 physical 的身体不可能在 VR 里面可以往下，所以我们才会从一些建筑或大空间、小空间，等于说在这个迷宫里面，有时候让你觉得很封闭。然后到了某一个景以后，突然全部打开，你可以看到上面有很高，下面有很高，希望制造这种反差的感觉。先讲到这边。
So the design of the maze is, in the original novel, they only got a very brief description about the maze. So it is the maze that have a lot of stairs going down, and at the bottom of the stairs, you can see the words written by the wife. So that is all the clues that we got from the novel, which is very little. But when we started the design for the maze, the whole team was super excited because everyone got different ideas, everyone got different imaginations about the maze. So we had a lot of discussion. And to fulfill these different ideas and to reflect on the original novel,it turns out that the maze we see right now, but physically that because like in the original novel, it emphasized that all the stairs going down, but physically and especially in VR, we cannot make it. We cannot let people walk down the stairs. So instead of that, we create a contrast. So in the maze space, at some point you feel very close up and very narrow. You feel like, oh, you're kind of like locked into the box, but at some point it's all open up. You have this vertical space, you can see all the way up and all the way down. So we create this contrast to open up the space and to open up the imagination for this.
然后我觉得 VR 最有趣的部分就是它可以改变现实。那这个也是这个云端空间这个迷宫想要达到的，就是我们当然知道我们站立在一个平面上面，就是我们的现实是一个平面，但是 VR 最有趣的就是它可以改变这个，所以当这个迷宫的景最想要达到就是它让你觉得你已经不是在一个平面了，你是在一个有极高极深的一个地方，那这个是我们想要让观众有这个身体感的这个部分这样。
So what I think is very important for VR is it kind of changes your sense to the reality. So inside the maze scene, it's already like it's a clouded space, it's a virtual space. So we can create all kind of sense, all kind of illusion for the viewers. So inside a maze that we would like people to feel like they are not on the flat surface anymore. So as you see, like in the maze, at some point we have this vertical space and you can see down very deep there. So we let people really feels like that people really believe that they are on that bridge, they're on that surface, which is not on the flat ground anymore. So that is the sense of the body that, as I mentioned, that we would like to create for the audiences.
还另外还有两个很有趣的事情，一个有趣的事情是我运用了很多 bug， 就是说有一些比如说青苔放到那个场景上面，或者是家具镶嵌在那个墙上，那个其实是一个 bug， 就有一天突然出现的 bug。那我们突然出现说，哇，这个 bug， 这个就是云端空间，这个就是人类想不出来的 bug， 所以我们也运用了一个 bug。然后另外一件事情就是这个迷宫的时间感，因为 modeling 的东西 3D 建模的东西它没有，它所有东西都是静止的，它就是没有任何东西在动除了人以外，那我们如何让这个时间 间的流动是在这个迷宫里面，所以我们用了很多空间里面的，比如说像玻璃一样的东西，像光线的变化，像一些 particle 在空间里面运作，然后让观众感觉这个空间是活的，这个也是很重要。
So inside the maze scene, there are two interesting parts. The first part is we take advantages on a lot of bugs. Originally, it was like the error from the tech system. So for example, the all this green mold and the plants that we see on the wall, and there's like floating furnitures which like kind of stuck into the wall. At the beginning, that was the technical bug. It was not specially designed for that, but it just showed up one day or in a sudden. But at that moment, we found out, yeah, that is perfect, because the maze itself is a clouded space, it's a virtual space, and that is something beyond human beings' imagination. So we kept them and we took advantage on that. And for me, I think it turns out really good to create this very unique atmosphere for the environment. And the second part is the sense of time that we create inside the scene, because for all these environments that we create in 3D modeling process, they are still, except that besides the character, nothing was moving. But we would love to create the sense of the time flow inside this environment. So our team, we did a lot of different effects, the visual effects. You can see some of the like the glossy and glittering effects like inside the space, or the different particles that is floating around you and they move a little bit. So all these little design, all these little elements is to create the sense of time flow. So people can actually feel like, oh, they are in this, not just in this lifeless environment. Mm.
Yeah, in The Man Who Couldn't Leave, there was a number of scenes where the camera is moving through space, and you have a couple of tracking shots where in the beginning where he's in the street and it's moving backwards, and then at the very end. But for the most part, your movement through the space comes from actually moving your body through the space, which I think is very different and unique for a six-DOF experience. And so just curious to hear some reflections on the importance of moving your body through space and what that gives you as a director to be able to direct people as they move their body through space and how that changes the experience of a piece.
那我们可以看到在这一次应该是这一次的这个作品当中，就是除了这最前面跟最后面有一些镜头的移动之外，其他大部分的移动其实都是仰赖于观众自己本身真的要去移动。那所以对导演来说，这样的设计为什么重要？到底观众真的实际去走动的这件事情改变了什么，或是他对于这个故事的重要性在哪里？
一个部分是希望观众还是可以自由探索，就是这个空间里面的资讯，然后 detail 足够丰富，然后让你可以自由去探索。因为有些人可能在讲话的时候，他就比如说在那个妻子的房间里面，你听着这个官在讲话，但是你不一定要一直看着他，你可以去探索他妻子空间里面的一些东西。那这个对我来讲也是inspired by 就是我在无法离开的人用的，比如说多面向，就是不同的面向有不同的故事在发生。那我会觉得这个很像是我们现实生活，也像是 VR 里面的所谓的剪接，就 VR 里面的剪接，它不是一个 cut 一个 cut， 而是空间的剪接，它可以制造一些意义。那这个也是运用在云在两千米，就是你借由你自己探索的一个你的选取的过程，你会建立这个故事的意义，所以你必须要自己去做这件事情。然后以及经过这个你不断的追寻，跟着观走，所以走路在这里面追寻这走这件事情也变得非常重要，就是你也是自己在踏上这个旅程去追寻这一段故事这样。
So the movement, the physical movement of the viewer plays an important roleIn this experience, because we would love to keep and offer the freedom for the audience to explore the environment freely and to create their own sense of the story through this movement. So like, for example, because like we created all the details, all the elements inside the story, inside the scenes, they are rich enough for people to discover detailedly. So we would love to let them to have the freedom to explore, to choose what they want to see, what they want to experience. So for example, inside the study room scene, although that you can listen to the story at the same time that Guan is having all the story, having the dialogue, you can listen to him at the same time, but you can explore the study room as you wish. So you can make the choice which part you want to see, how detailed you want to explore, and where you want to stand. So for me, that is kind of like a VR editing. So this editing is not like frame by frame, but kind of play with the environment, the different direction, different part of these 360 environment inside VR. That is also one of the experience, one of the thing that I play alone in my previous work, The Man Who Couldn't Leave. So in the previous work, that we also have like different things happening in different direction. So I kind of expand this in this experience and this technique into the clouds at 2,000 meters up. And through this process for people to freely explore the environment, actually, for me, I think that is the process that creates, allowing the viewers to create their own story, their own sense of the story, because how they see the story, how they want to do, what they want to see, that is very different from one by one. And why walking is important is that it is a journey of finding. It is a journey of seeking something. So physically walking is just like you're physically like really tracing something, really finding something yourself. So it strengthens the connection of the viewers and the story.
Yeah, and I'm curious if you could talk a bit about Gaussian splats and really enjoy the fidelity that you had both in the environments as well as the character volumetric capture. So yeah, just curious to hear some comments and reflections on what you were able to do with Gaussian splats that you would not be able to do with, say, photogrammetry or other techniques.
他可以分享一下，就是在高斯坡件的运用这部分，因为就是在这一次的环境啊，或者是说其他不同物件当中都看到非常好的运用。那想请唐允分享一下，说就这一次在使用高斯坡件上，有哪些是 你可以做到，有哪些，或者是有哪些是那个其他的技术没有办法达到，但这一次达到的。
Gaussian spatting的部分，Gaussian spatting的部分，因为其他的扫描方式，其他的 Warren capture 或者是说其他的 photogrammetry 的扫描方式，它其实 它的构成不一样，因为它的其他的构成，它是构成皮肤的那个表面，或者是物体的表面。 对，然后它，但是它缺少了一个，因为人的就算是人的形体是固态的好了，但是比如说环境森林里面，或者是我们的环境里面有非常碎碎的部分，那那个碎碎的部分要做到非常真实的话，那个其实要花很大量的成本，那其实是应该是就是在现在的成本里面跟能力部分是做不到那样的真实感。但是我又希望它有这个故事是立基在一个，就是有点像是电影感的东西上面，所以这个部分在高斯坡件里面就有非常好的表现，就是它可以有它的构成不是表面皮肤的那一层，它的构成是它用条状或者是用一些它的就是单一的怎么讲，就是一个条状或 particle 的部分去组成这些细节，所以它很好的还原了，比如说在森林里面那个场景，因为森林里面我们曾经也想说，哦，要建模吗？或者是用别的方式吗？但是又觉得要建模建到像这么真实的一个森林的场景，那是不可能的。
So Gaussian splatting for us is very different. It's very different from other technique, no matter like scanning or like other volumetric capture. So I think the key difference between them is that for other technique, the forming is different. For other technique, they kind of form the surface of the object. But it's like for this kind of a composition, it's lack of those very 3D, very detailed fragments, which is the real elements composition. So if we want to do like using other technique, but create this very realistic texture, that would cost a lot. And even I don't think that is possible to create the real sense of realistic with other technique. But with Gaussian splatting, it's very nice that they actually able to do this. So the composition of the Gaussian splatting elements, basically they compose the elements with very little, kind of like a linear or like longer shape of these small fragments. So they compose together, which is more closer and more realistic and looks more real as the basically looks like the scene, the exact element in our real life. For example, for the forest scene, it really recreates the realistic scene, the realistic visual style inside VR, because we did have a lot of discussion on how to present the forest scene. We discussed about like 3D modeling or anything else, but feels like, okay, that is impossible to recreate a realistic forest without Gaussian slatting. Yeah.
Great. And finally, what do you think the ultimate potential of virtual reality and immersive storytelling might be, and what it might be able to enable?
OK, 那最后一个问题比较开放的问题是，那导演对于就是 VR 的说故事或是沉浸式的说故事这件事情，你觉得这个会还有什么样的潜力？然后你觉得期待就是它可以走向什么？
因为我自己就是很重视说故事部分，就是从我以前的作品到现在都是很重视说故事，但是我觉得比较有趣是在 VR 里面说故事，你不能有太强的控制欲，就是那个控制欲是我不能控制这个故事要怎么说，我必须要开放大概有 maybe 到一半的空间让观众自己去体验这个故事。那这个 balance 是很对我来说也是这整个历程两年的制作过程一直尝试在克服的，就是什么时候我要控制，什么时候我不要控制，要留给观众。那这个是一直到最后，一直到我们来威尼斯前的最后，都是我们还继续不断在调整的部分这样。这个好像跟他不是未来，但是
The feedback might not be like fully reflected the question you ask, but it's something that director would like to share. So for the storytelling, that has always been the core of my creation, always. But the special part for VR storytelling is that you can't control everything fully. So for example, I think that just like even like up to 50%, that storytelling is you have to give the freedom to the viewer, and you can't control how the story tells itself because the control is on the viewer, how they see the story, how they feel the story. So that is very different from the traditional filmmaking, traditional ways of storytelling. So that balance is something that I constantly still learning and still trying for the class of 2,000 meters up. Even at the very end, before we set up the journey to Venice, we are still adjusting the balance between the freedom for the viewer and the control from as a creator, how they see the story.
VR 的就是比较故事叙事，VR说故事这件事情的feedback。
就是过去我在做360电影的时候，也有很多人在讨论说360电影已经死掉了，或者是觉得 VR 这个媒体它比较偏向于互动或游戏，没办法说故事。但是我觉得我在我的创作路上，我一直很想要挑战这件事情。这样就是说，其实我们创造一个好的环境，或者是你设计好一个好的环境或好的一个故事的 flow 或者是一个节奏的话，其实观众是可以在这个里面体验到故事的。那这个也是我觉得是比如说有人在看完我的作品里面有很好的 feedback， 觉得说哦，他没有过这样子的故事的体验，或者是甚至有人比较夸张的会说哦，这可能是电影的另外一种未来。那当然我这些 feedback 我都很感激有这些 feedback， 那这个也是我想要尝试的，就是说我们是可以用 VR 去创造一个好的故事，并且让观众是活在那个电影里面的。
So circling back to the storytelling in VR. So my previous work, they were like VR360 videos, and somebody might say that, oh, the VR360 is already dead and VR is more suitable for interactive or gaming. But storytelling in VR, it has always been something that I would love to keep challenging and keep trying and keep improving on. Because the storytelling is still the very, very, very core of all the creation. And I do believe and I know that is possible as long as that you have the great story, you have the great script, you create a great environment, and you have a good design on the story flow, and you provide that to the viewer. The viewer can actually feel the story and get inside the story and living in the story through VR. And that storytelling, for me, that is the very core, and that is something I do believe is possible and is capable inside the VR creation. And for example, this time the clouds are 2,000 meters up. We are very flattered and very honored to receive some very amazing feedback. Some people say that that is the story, that that is the experience that actually let them feel the story, actually get inside the story. And some of people might say, oh, that is the future of cinema. So all these feedbacks, we are very honored and we precious them deeply. That something reflects on our spirits and the core insists on the storytelling and pushing the boundary in VR.
Right. Any final thoughts for the broader immersive community?
那有最后有没有什么一些想要跟这个 immersive 的社群讲的话吗？
我很谢谢那个威尼斯影展，然后也很谢谢Liz 跟 Michelle， 因为他们创造了一个很好的就是大家可以交流的机会，不管是交流想法、交流技术或交流产业里面的各种。那也很谢谢 Kenby， 他一直在这个里面，就是给我们很多的很好的报道，以及就是我们在来之前就已经看到他的 Excel 的表了。这就是我觉得这个是我在电影产业里面没有办法体会到的一种大家有很旺盛的创作的能量在流动的一个感觉。
So at last, I would like to thank the opportunity of being here in Venice and to thank Liz and Michelle providing this amazing platform for people to exchange their thoughts, no matter it's like creative thoughts, it's like new information in technique, in the storytelling or in creation. That is the amazing platform for exchanging all these sense that we share together as a community. And I would like to also thank Kent for providing this constantly amazing reports, amazing interviews, and amazing insights in the stories. Even before we came to Venice, we already saw the Excel sheet that you share in the group, which is really amazing. And I think that is also something that I really appreciate for the VR community now, that globally, it really has the vibe of this very vibrant and very high energy and really high, like everyone is very keen to create something and very keen to do something creative and do something new together. So that is the sense of the community that I've never felt in the traditional film community, which is very unique for this VR or this international immersive community here.
Awesome. And just wanted to thank you for joining me here on the podcast today. And just want to share just a couple final thoughts. Yeah, I really enjoyed The Clouds Are 2,000 Meters Up, and I felt like that you're blending together all of these different techniques and forms, from architecture to theater to cinema to theme park design and to more game design, where you're interacting and moving through space. And yeah, just really enjoyed the overall story and the experience, and felt like I was transported into the story, and just a lot of really awe-inspiring moments that just really landed for me and was one of my top experiences that I saw this year. So yeah, just wanted to thank you again for joining me here on the podcast to help break it all down.
再次谢谢导演，就是这一次可以来接受我的访问，然后有一些就是真的很想分享我这一次我看完人在两千米之后的感想。我觉得它真的是一个非常好的结合，不管是从电影、从剧场，甚至是建筑，甚至是有什么主题公园的设计，甚至是到游戏互动，就是你如何设计大家的这个互动的这个部分，他觉得都让我觉得说非常的、非常的、非常的完美。然后非常提供了一个非常棒的体验，然后我真的很喜欢这个故事，然后而且 这应该是我今年看到最喜欢的几个作品之一，所以再次谢谢导演做这个作品，然后也今天接受我的访问。
Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Thanks so much for tuning into this Venice Immersive 2025 coverage, and hopefully you found some use in some of this documentation of these experiences that are very ephemeral. And some of these show at these festivals, and they don't really go out widely beyond this a lot of times. I mean, maybe they are, but you may not be in a place that it's easy for you to see them. And so it's a real privilege to be able to see all these experiences, but also to be able to sit down with these creators and have a really deep, in-depth conversation in a way that there are not a lot of other opportunities to really dig into at this level. And so really appreciate all the time from all the creators to be able to have these conversations, but also for you to take the time to listen to them. And also it's been a challenge of trying to find a way of speaking about these experiences in an abstract, theoretical way, or at least in a way that I can ground it and allow you to put yourself into the experiences to kind of imagine some of these different things that they're doing, how I'm experiencing it, but also the different types of design decisions that the creator is making. So if you find this useful and want to support this type of effort of both documenting the history of immersive storytelling, but also to support this kind of wildly ambitious independent journalism project that is very much driven by support by listeners like yourself. So please do consider becoming a member of the Patreon at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening. Thank you.